news to us. So just hang tight, Zaria. Good morning, everyone. My name's Etienne. I get to talk for the next half an hour or so. We're going to work through, if you've been coming to Pathway over the last few weeks, we're working through parts of the Bible that are called parables. These are usually short-ish kind of stories that Jesus told, and each of them kind of is supposed to teach us something about who God is, what he's like, what do we see about him, what do we see about ourselves. And so I want to introduce today's one. It's a really fascinating one. It's an interesting one. But I need kids. It doesn't have to be kids. It can be adults. I need 5 volunteers to help me with this introduction. It's okay. You don't have to really say anything. It's pretty easy. What about kids? Let's start with kids. Can I have some kids to help me? All right. Don't leave me hanging. If nothing else. There's 2 of them. I need 3 more. You're going to get some money. There's money involved. Reggie was going to come before the money. All right. Maddie, Reggie, Anna. I want to say, can that be Zena? You've grown so much. I saw you. I need to do a double check. Yes. Zena and Sammy. Yes. Cool. All right. Let's pretend we are having a fundraising event, and I post online that for your school holidays, I need some work done at my house, and I will hire anyone who's willing to work at my house with a bunch of jobs that I need to get done. Some of it's sorting out some really disgusting bedrooms.
This is a great idea, hun.
Okay, so I post on this forum and I go, on the day, on the 10th of July, we're going to start this. And the first person to sign up to this is Zena. Now, she is really keen. She starts working for me at 6 o'clock in the morning. She fronts up. It's a 12-hour shift. That was a deal, right? 6 o'clock, she shows up. About 9 o'clock in the morning, I figure, well, I don't know, I just want to check because maybe there are still some people available. And it turns out that Sammy's still available. And I said, all right, quickly, come on over. You're going to start work at 9 o'clock. 12 o'clock, lunchtime, I think the same thing. Reggie's still free. She's, in the forum. You slept.
Yeah.
No, you did not. You were very keen to work. Thank you very much. This is nobody hired you. 3 o'clock, I go, Marty was still there. And I said, all right, yep, all right, come on, 3 o'clock, you can finish the last 3 hours. 5 o'clock, I go, well, Anna's still there, and I go, thank you, Anna, you can come on, and you can work for me also. Now, we get to 6 o'clock, the end of the day, and it's pay time, right? Minimum wage, I need to dole out some pays here. The expectation is very much that I don't know if this is the correct money. I think it is. But let's pretend that it is, and I've divvied this up fairly. I owe you roughly, Zena, on the minimum wage scale, I believe, who's good with maths? 20 times 12, $240. Yeah? Is that right? Good. Relieved. It's on my notes up there somewhere, but I don't want to interrupt it. So don't count your money, but I'm going to say, Zena, you get 240. Sammy, you worked for 9 hours. You get what's 9 times 20?
180.
Good, 180. These are maths brains. You worked for 6 hours, Reggie. You get $120. You work only for 3 hours. You get only 60. 30 bucks. Primary school teachers. You work for only 1 hour, you get only $20. 12 hours? But you worked only 1, yeah? $20 an hour. $20 an hour, roughly minimum wage. But here's what actually happens at the end of this day, if you know the biblical story. I say, well, it's 12 o'clock. Zena, you get $240. you get $240. You get $240 for 6 hours. You get $240 for 3 hours. And you get $240 for 1 hour's worth of work. Call? That's the question. What will Zena, what does Zena think about this? That's the question, right? Zena's dad straight away says, call fair work. That is what we would do and say, this is not fair. Right? Now, I want you to listen very carefully to the story that Zaria is going to read to us. This is more or less what it is. Now, can I have my money back before she reads it? Because, Marty? It's your mother's Monopoly board game. You really don't want to lose money. All right, Zaria, come on up for us. Zaria's going to read this. It's from the book of Matthew. If you have your Bible, if you want to scroll, chapter 20, verses 1 to 16. I'm so sorry. Do it again.
So I'm Zaria, and I'll be reading the Bible reading, which comes from Matthew 20, 1 to 16. The parable of the workers in the vineyard. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire workers for his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard. About 9 in the morning, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, "You also go and work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right." So they went. He went out again about noon and about 3 in the afternoon and did the same thing. About 5 in the afternoon, he went out and found still others standing around. He asked them, "Why have you been standing here all day long doing nothing?" "Because no one has hired us," they answered. He said to them, "You also go and work in my vineyard." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last one hired and going on to the first." The workers who were hired about 5 in the afternoon came and each received a denarius. So when those who were hired first, they expected to receive more. But each one of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. "These who were hired last worked only 1 hour," they said, "and you have made them equal to us who have borne the work of the who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day." But he answered one of them, "I am not being unfair to you, friend. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the one who was hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous? So, the last will be first and the first will be last."
Thank you, Zaria. It's an incredible parable, really. And I want us to unpack it in a very simple form. I just want us to look at the characters in it. I want us to look at the owner of this vineyard, and then we can look at the workers. All of them, but particularly the ones who were hired first. What do they show us? What do they teach us, right? Let's begin with the owner, the master of this vineyard. What can we learn from him? I'll just say very briefly, this is not a parable about sound business practices. If you're a business owner and you're a Christian and it's okay, there's other biblical wisdom passages for you how to run your business. This is not one of them. This is about something different. All right? This is actually, I think the question that we need to get at is, what is it that makes this business owner do what he did? Why does Jesus tell a story with a character like this? What is the character supposed to reveal, to teach? There's a real point about this. And I wonder if the clue to that answer lies in the parable itself. When the master, did you notice when he goes back to the marketplace? He asks the workers, why are you still standing here? In fact, I think, if I recall it correctly, when he goes back towards the end of the day, he says, why have you been standing here, in verse 6, all day long doing nothing? My mind, maybe that's my Aussie culture already kicking in, goes straight away, this is a bunch of slackers, bludgers. Well, you've been standing here all day doing nothing. What's wrong with you? That's what I think. That's what jumps into my head straight up. Except I'm dead wrong, because their answer to the master is a very telling one. We have been here all day, but nobody's hired us. We're willing to work. We want to work. In fact, I think I can safely speculate, we need the work. We need to feed children, families. We're desperate. And what this master does is he sees their desperation. He hears their heart's cry. He feels their pain. And I think in that marketplace, it is compassion that drives him. It's compassion that says, okay, he can't bear the thought of what happens out of this. These people are going to go home and come payday, come the end of the day, end of the hour. Does he give them a meager 20 bucks? Or does he have compassion on them and he feeds them a full day's wages, right? Of course, I don't think it takes much to jump from the parable to real life. As we listen to the stories of people who know this master, it's God, by the way. How often do you hear of people who were in this marketplace of sorts? I would argue that's the story of every human being who knows God. You either have known or you do know that you too are lost, hopeless, stuck. We all are lost for love. Deep, deep love. Not just love from people, but a perfect love from a perfect one who made us. We all are in a marketplace looking for peace. Not just compromise or ceasefires. No. Peace. Rest of our souls. We're in the marketplace for joy. We're in the marketplace for assurance, knowing that I'll be okay, my life will be okay, that my future is okay, that there is nothing that can happen to me that will make me not okay. I am okay. I have peace. I have joy. I have love. We're in the marketplace, some of us, to get rid of guilt, enormous guilt, shame, addictions. Name it, the list can go on. We all strive and strive and we work and we try all sorts of things to get whatever it is that we, whatever our marketplace is, and yet we stay on the market. No one hires us. We can't get out of those places until one day or another we meet the person of Jesus Christ. He comes to you and he says, one way or another, come to me. Come work for me. My burden is easy. My yoke is light. And my dearest friend, can I invite you today. I don't know many of us here, and even if I do know you, I may not know you well enough. Are you in a marketplace this morning? Are you desperate? Are you perhaps here not by accident, but by divine appointment? Because that same master in the story is here. Here. Now. Is he calling you today to say, come? Is he looking on you where finally you hear an acceptance of a master? And you'll know if it is. Even if you don't fully understand it, even if you don't have all your questions answered, and I'm suggesting you do over time, but you know deep within that there is a yearning and a longing to know something or someone deeper and better. My dear friend, can you make today your day? Can you make today the day where you, whether it's after this service, talk to me, or to whoever it is you may have come with, or even just go home alone and say, yes, Lord Jesus, I want to know you. I want to get off this marketplace. Name the thing that it is that you want to get out of. Ask him to help you. This story assures you, this parable and Jesus, the Jesus who is with us this morning, whose imperfect mouthpiece I think I am this morning, is showing you that he is compassionate, that he cares for you, that he loves you, that everything that is needed for your happiness, for your flourishing, for your care, that denarii, a full day's wages, the full gospel is what the Christian language is there for you. It's yours. Would you receive it today? Would you please see that from the Master? Would you see what he's like? Better still, would you hear his voice? That's the first character I want us to look at. The second character is, the workers, particularly the guys who started at 6 o'clock, right? We want to think about what their response to this whole unfair industrial relations sort of scenario teaches us about ourselves. And perhaps if you've been a Christian for a very long time, you'll be more readily able to relate to this, I think. I think this is the group that Jesus is trying to reach here, okay? You've noticed, you'll recall from the reading of the story, that at the end they began to grumble against the landowner. The men who hired last, you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day. You recall the owner's response. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous? I think this exposes two sinful attitudes that come up, I'm going to say in my heart, I think it's safe to say for most of us, if not all of us, right? Two things that we get from this statement. Number one, I always love to think more highly of myself than what I should. Love to think more highly of myself than I should. It's really absurd when you think about it. These older, or I'm going to say older workers, the people who work the longest. As if they had any claim on the master's money. they got exactly what they were owed. The grumbling is sort of suggesting that they ought to, are entitled to tell him what he should do with his money, right? And I think here's what it looks like in our lives, if I can try and... Parables have a great range of applications, but here's some of the things I think is relevant here. I start thinking often of the good things in my life as things that I've earned or deserved, and not good things that God has given me. I start forgetting that He didn't have to take me out of the marketplace at all. Not at all. In fact, if I really want to think about it, what I earned as a human being, and this is where the Christian message is quite confronting, quite offensive, is that I should have been left out there. I don't deserve God. You know yourself. I need to be reminded every now and again to look into my own heart and see my own sinfulness, see how undeserving I truly am of God, right? I've no right to demand anything from Him. Whatever goodness I know as a free and unmerited gift that God has given me. The Bible calls this grace. How often do you think of every good thing in your life as a lavish and kind gift of God to you? The air that you breathe, the food that you eat, sun that shines, the people in your life who love you, let alone the good gift of His Son, the forgiveness of your sin, to be allowed to know God, the promise of living eternally with Him, all free, all utterly unattainable for me, right? I don't own any of that. And so I should think of myself utterly, humbly. That's the first thing I think we get from these early workers. They think more of themselves than they should. Number one. Number two, thinking less of Christ than I should. Okay, here's what I mean. Here's what I mean. The onus... Second question to those workers, are you envious because I am generous? These earlier workers are jealous of the later workers, right? It's envy that they struggle with. They wanted what they think the other workers had. Instead of being satisfied with what they already had. Envy and jealousy is always a result of dissatisfaction with what you have. Always. They think that the other workers who got hired later had it better than what they had. Right? And I deliberately choose the word they think that they had it better. Because the earlier workers were better off right from the beginning. Why? They knew already from 6 a.m. in the morning that day they would have food to eat. Their day is locked in. The good master has come to them, led them in. They knew him the longest. They knew the assurance the longest. The girl had to wait till 5 p.m. sitting in that marketplace, desperate, afraid, anxious, uncertain of what they would eat that night. How absurd that the early worker should be jealous of that person, right? But you see, that's what jealousy does to us. It's what envy does to us. Warps our thinking. Makes us think that the other is always better off, when in fact, to begin with, that's not true. And at the very same time, making us fail to see the great thing that we've been given. And so we find this works itself out in the church, in the lives of the people of God, right? I'm tempted to become envious of other people who seem to be able to follow Jesus at less of a cost to them than it is to me. Right? I'm tempted, especially when we're talking about being made weak for the sake of Christ or the cost of following Jesus, to feel like others have an easier time at being a Christian than what I do. We'll all get the same reward in the end, but it's harder for me, I'm tempted to think, often. And it's real. Because our backs really start to hurt as we work with Jesus, right? The sweat we break really is agonizing. The joints pain. We really are giving up much of the comforts and the pleasures and the rights of this life. And in our sinful nature, we can easily be tempted to think, surely this is easier if you could live a full life and a comfortable life and only come to faith when I'm 57. Have all the riches and the wealth and the experiences of what the world has to offer, traveling, acquiring wealth, all those sorts of things, and the person who came to Christ at age 57 or 59 or even 69, didn't they have a better deal? What must the missionary think who sits in Madagascar on a ship or ready to be martyred? Didn't the others have a better deal? Right? It's real. Sorely tempted to think that way. And I think the point in the parable is that Jesus wants to say to us, no. You have known me the longest. And you've known me the deepest. Because as you've worked with me, alongside me in my vineyard, you knew me. You had me, all of me, all the time in ever-increasing measures. Nobody who comes to know Christ later says, gee, I'm so glad I came to know Christ only in my 60s or my 40s. Nobody. Nobody. Without exception, people I've spoken to said, I wish I knew him earlier. Why? Because he is better, and it is better to know him earlier, and it is better to be with him in hardship and in suffering and in weakness. And so when I struggle with this jealousy or this envy, and I question whether I'm taking the Christian life too seriously and all that sort of stuff, I need to be reminded of what I already have. I have Christ. In him I possess already now all the love that my soul ever needs, no matter how hateful the world may be of me. I have all the peace, no matter how restless my circumstances may be. I have all the joy, no matter how high the cost or the grief. All the assurance, no matter how scary or uncertain the future. I have all the power in the world to deal with my sin, no matter how impossible it seems to overcome. I have the full presence of Jesus with me, daily, always, no matter how lonely I get. I have him, known him the longest, and in my hard labor, I'll get to know him the deepest and the most intensely. So, that's it, friends. We come to the end. Can I just summarize and invite you again? If you're in the marketplace this morning, the Master is looking for you. He's worth following. He's worth knowing. Doesn't matter what hour this is for you. 6 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Go with him. Go with him today. If you've been at it for a long time, you're jealous, you're struggling, will you be reminded of the sheer worth of your employment by this Master? May he increase its value and its joy in us daily. Ask him to show you. Let's pray together. Dear Jesus, I pray for the friend here this morning who's keen, Get out of the marketplace and have the joy of working with you. Not to earn you, but to receive you. To receive your invitation. May they come today. And Father, I pray secondly, for those who might be grappling in the heat of the day, perhaps sorely tempted. Do you think that it feels so wrong to say? Do you think that you've done us in? How bizarre. We're so sorry for that. And will you, by the wonderful work of your Spirit, magnify the value of Christ to us? So much so that there is nothing but gratitude in us for every single thing you give us. No matter our circumstance, that the abiding joy of the gospel will be every day reason for us to dance, to sing, to praise, and praise you. We ask, again, not because we deserve anything, but because of your great love for us in Jesus. Amen. Thank you. Music team.